The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We welcome you back. The final hour has arrived, and we're always excited to talk to Andrea Adelson from ESPN, just back from the women's tournament, talking about football issues as well. And Andrea's got a new job, a part-time job. She's going to get into the coaching business as we get ready to say hello to her. Andrea, thank you so much for being with us. This just came out from FSU. Andrea will be one of the coaches next week at the spring game, along with, well, there goes the fun, Andy Staples. Andrea, thanks so much. I don't know, maybe they just thought it would be easier to get two people whose first name began with A, but I understand you being chosen. I don't understand Staples.
So, Paul, Andy and I go way, way back. I was the sports editor at the Independent Florida Alligator at the University of Florida, and he was my assistant sports editor. So I feel like in any head job I'm going to take, I need to bring him on as my assistant. But when Mike Norvell extended the invitation, I said, Mike, are you sure it's allowed to have two Gators coaching your team? But I am going to bring my visor. I thought I'd try it out here and see if maybe I could throw it in honor of Steve Spurrier on Doak's, since he owned Florida State when he was the head coach there.
Well, enjoy the afternoon. I did this once, and I made this serious, gravest error of you know, they always say when you do something, act like you want to be there. So I put on the I won, by the way, at the Alabama spring game, and I put on my Alabama hat and my brand new Alabama pants and my khaki pants and my Alabama Nike shoes. And that picture has haunted me now for 10 years about when I try to say I'm not an Alabama fan. And they say, well, yeah, how can you say that? So don't wear the FSU gear, please.
I think they would take my University of Florida degree away from me if I wore the Florida State gear, Paul.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk a little bit about what is going on. I know Clemson is done with spring. Others are starting to wrap up. What do you hear?
Clemson is done. Spring game was last weekend. And in listening to those comments from Nick Saban, I feel like I could replace Nick Saban with Dabo Sweeney talking about his new quarterback, DJ Uiagalelei, who's got a lot of work to do this offseason, not just as a leader in developing what it's going to take to be the guy for Clemson and this offense, but also in the weight room as well. Dabo said after the game, he's still got a freshman body and he's going to have to do some work there. He's 250 pounds, so they really want him to be able to use his body to run and make some explosive plays in the run game as the quarterback. Some of the stuff we saw Trevor Lawrence do so well, but of course, DJ is a much bigger, more physical guy. They really want to use that to an advantage. The defense actually won the scrimmage or the spring game. And so you can take that as, well, maybe the defense kind of needed to after that performance in the semifinal against Ohio State. But on the other hand, a lot of work to do for the offense. And one note of concern, Paul, backup quarterback Tyson Pumachon is going to be out for the season. He has an Achilles injury suffered in that spring game. And right now, there is nobody with any experience at quarterback behind DJ. So that's going to be something to monitor. They've got some guys coming in over the summer, but perhaps Clemson may have to turn to the transfer portal just as a way to bring in another scholarship player at that position.
Andrea, I don't know why I just don't feel sorry for Clemson, but anyway, it could be my biases showing, but that does sound serious. Other than Clemson, you'll see Florida State this weekend. What does it look like in the ACC? I know North Carolina has a great quarterback. What about Miami always thinks they're going to be good. Who would be the main contenders?
Of course, Miami opens against Alabama, so we'll know whether or not they're for real or pretenders again in that game. The big storyline with Miami, of course, is the rehab for quarterback D'Eriq King, who was injured in the bowl game, torn ACL. Manny Diaz has said that he's smashing every goal that he sets for himself in the rehab process, but still, it's only going to be about 8 months removed until he plays Alabama in the opener. So, of course, you have to wonder what kind of shape he's going to be in, whether he's going to be able to do everything that makes him so exceptional at a quarterback, i.e. running the ball, keeping teams off balance. I do think Miami is going to be better. Manny Diaz now is going to be calling the plays for defense. I think that was a much needed change for this group. But I just don't think they have got the talent or the depth at this point in what Manny Diaz is trying to do to keep up with Alabama has. So we'll know more about Miami. That's a measuring stick game for them. Obviously, you mentioned North Carolina. I think they'd be right behind Clemson. And remember, 2 years ago in Mac Brown's first year, they almost beat Clemson because they went for a two-point conversion. In the end, they failed. They could have won that game. And now they're going into year three. Sam Howell, you mentioned a quarterback. They bring just about everybody back on defense. The question for North Carolina, two questions. Skill positions, they've got to replace their best skill players at running back and at receiver, but they've also got to win games in the fourth quarter. This is a team that won big games, but also played very poorly against teams like Florida State and Virginia. And if you want to be a national championship contender, you've got to beat the middle to all of the ACC to get yourself there. It's not just about Clemson. You got to beat everybody else. And so far, North Carolina, they haven't shown that ability to do that.
Andrew, before you go, I believe you just got back from San Antonio, the site of the women's tournament, and there's been so much controversy about what the NCAA didn't do right. What was it like being there, and what did you learn?
So my colleague Heather Dinich and I spoke to over 25 coaches, administrators, athletic directors, people associated with the sport, the NCAA as well, put out a very in-depth piece about how we got here and what steps need to be taken to help grow the women's game. And there's a couple of key things that I hope people take away from this tournament. Yes, the NCAA, they dropped the ball. Everybody admits that. They've apologized. They corrected things. The atmosphere inside the Alamo Dome, even though there was a limited amount of people, it was electric. People were having a great time. It was loud, and people were into the games. And as everyone saw, there was some exciting basketball being played in the semifinals and, of course, the national championship game. And so the biggest takeaway is, okay, yeah, the NCAA admits they messed up. Now, what are we going to do to correct not just the mistakes from this tournament, but also some missteps along the way that have gotten it to the point where nobody even knows the value of women's basketball and the women's basketball tournament, because all of that is just lumped in under the basketball umbrella. The folks we talk to want a serious evaluation of how can we monetize, market, and grow this sport so that we can get more people interested. And as Dawn Staley has said repeatedly, we've got a great product. If you pour the resources into us, you won't be sorry. And I think we saw the beginning steps of that from this weekend. Folks who tuned in and watched, I think everybody is hoping those people continue to tune in and watch. And now with this review that's going to happen with the NCAA, the hope is they'll be able to continue to take the steps that they need to be able to market and grow the sport the way they feel it needs to.
Very, very interesting. Andrea, we'll be watching this weekend, and you better call some good plays. They need a little innovation down there in Seminole land.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tebow jump pass, Paul. Tebow jump pass.
Exactly. Andrea Adelson joining us. And always great to talk to her. We are heading to a break. Much more to come from you at 855-242-7285. Still about 15 minutes remaining on a Monday afternoon, early evening.
You are listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back. Great to have all of you here on a Monday afternoon. Let's check in with Mel, who is in Florida. How are you, Mel?
Hey, Paul. Happy Monday.
Thank you very much.
I have just had about enough of this talk about voter suppression in Georgia, especially Gary from Sacramento. Gary from Sacramento has not read the law. He does not know what he's talking about. He just thought it was racist because it's from Georgia or the South. But let me tell you some of the I was a 30-something year member of the Georgia bar before I moved back home to Florida, and I've read provisions of this law. The provision of the law that deals with banning volunteers from handing out food, water, or other gifts is to stop what's called line warming. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
You're not supposed to be given stuff to influence people right before they're voting. That doesn't mean that they can't get water or access to water. The registrar, the supervisor, whatever they call the election supervisor in Georgia now, can put a ice chest full of water out there. It just cannot have any connection to a candidate. And another provision says it facilitates, the critics say it facilitates voter suppression. Well, just because they say because it requires a voter ID. Well, more than half the states in the United States require voter IDs. Residents in Georgia can get a free ID from any county registrar's office with proper identification of residency. And Georgia has almost 11 million people in the state, residents of the state. Approximately 200,000 Georgians lack a driver's license or state ID. And this is according to CNN. So that's less than 2% of the population. And the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported that 97% of the registered voters have a license or a state ID. So you don't think some community organizers can get IDs for 200,000 people?
Sure.
It's ridiculous. People have not read the law. They just have heard the talking heads, and they have a knee-jerk reaction because they think it's suppressing the voters from African Americans and other minorities. It is not. In fact, it has increased early voting hours in most every county in the state. So it has not suppressed anybody's vote. People still will have the same or greater access to vote than they had in the past. So it's ridiculous. The Major League Baseball somebody scared them to death.
Mel, thank you very much for sharing that. Let's check in with Les, who is up next. Hello, Les.
Thanks, Paul, for taking my call.
Thank you.
Before I ask you my question, I got to tell you, as a young man growing up in Birmingham, when I first got interested in sports in the early 80s, there was nothing better than Clyde Bolton, Alf Van Hoos, Bill Lumpkin, and Paul Feinbaum. Well, it was just amazing. You didn't have ESPN. All you had was those two papers. I'd take the Post-Herald sports page with me on the way to school, drove my daddy crazy, and then in the evening, the Birmingham News would be there, and I would read that. It's really where you got your sports, and I would not be hesitant to say that all four of y'all could have worked at any Los Angeles, New York, anywhere in America would have been glad to have those four sports writers.
Well, Les, you're talking about three great sports writers in Clyde and Mr. Van Hoos and Bill. And I was the only thing that separated me, I was different. I was a rebel and without a cause, and I didn't care what I did. But I finally grew up, and thank goodness I did, or I wouldn't be sitting here if I hadn't. But thank you for saying that.
Back in the early 80s, if you were an Auburn fan or an Alabama fan from week to week, you either hated Paul Feinbaum or you loved him.
Well, you know, Bill Lumpkin, we used to drive together to all the games, and I mean, he gave me that idea. I grew up in Tennessee. I didn't know that much about Alabama, and he said you can never go wrong feeding the Auburn Alabama feud, and I took that advice to heart.
You did that. You certainly did that. Now listen, you never shy away from the controversial questions, and I'm going to give you one.
Okay.
You know, all this other stuff going on with Major League Baseball and voting rights, and you know this and that. There's something else that's coming through the pipe right now that's not getting a lot of attention, and it's these states that are passing these laws saying that, says that a female athlete should not have to compete in a sport against a student formerly of the male sex when the sport is designed for women's competition. And I'd like to know where you come down on that. Do you think it's fair for a man to transition to a female and then, say, play women's softball or women's basketball? Can you see Charles Barkley transitioning to a female and then playing female basketball? Can you see that?
Yeah, you know, listen, this is a big topic right now, and it is. I have not spent a lot of time studying it. I do know a number of governors are against it happening. Am I correct on that?
Yes, sir. It's Arkansas, Mississippi, and Idaho right now.
Right. I am, if you will indulge me, you paid me a tremendous compliment early. I would like to spend a little more time studying the issue because I really have not, and I'm not. That is not a cop out because it's. But I understand exactly where you're coming from. I also am a big believer in everyone having similar rights. But I don't know enough about it. But I will find out very quickly if you'll grant me a little reprieve here.
You got it, Paul. I'll call you again soon.
Thank you. And really, am I not that well versed on an issue? But I've heard about it. But Cat Daddy, can you help me out here? I need a position paper.
It's a pile of confusion, just like Temptation said. But Feinbaum's looking good. Big Paul sounding good.
Thank you.
I tell you, the women ought to decide on that situation now because they got to decide if they want to compete against the people or not. I say ESPN will just start up a transgender league, and they put that on television and let the transgenders play the transgender.
Well, I mean, Cat Daddy, you're making light of a very serious subject.
Oh, no, I'm serious. Serious. I'm serious. I think that might solve the situation right there. But anyway, do you have a big Easter?
It was fantastic. It was a beautiful day, as you well know, living not too far from me, and couldn't have been better.
Yes, sir, we had a blessed Easter. My wife, Velveeta, got home Saturday morning, so we was able to spend Easter together. Surgery went real well.
She it did.
She's doing a whole lot better now.
That's fantastic.
Her surgery. Yeah, she had a hemorrhoid surgery. And I had to go find a donut pillow so she could sit down on that thing.
Hey, by the way, I have had friends who have gone through that, and I know some people out there around America are snickering. It's nothing to snicker about.
Serious problem.
No,
somebody
I used to work with had that issue, and you literally cannot sit down.
No, sir, she couldn't, and it was just terrible. But one old thing I want to say, and I'll get off of him. Did you know that if you have tickets at the wheel call of a Major League Baseball game, you have to show a photo ID before they give them to you?
I would assume so, yes.
I don't understand why everybody's so upset about having a photo ID to vote. You got to have one to come in the liquor store here. In South Carolina, no matter how you look, you might look like you're 63, 65 years old, they still card you for your ID before they buy you, sell you a pack of cigarettes. I don't see why everybody's so upset.
That's amazing. Hey, thanks, Cat Daddy. Richard is up next. Good afternoon, Richard.
Paul, it's Richard Scott.
Oh, my goodness. How are you, Richard?
Yeah. I'm fine. I'd love to be talking to you about something else, but I heard Bill Jr. call you, and just kind of wanted to add my little bit about Bill.
Yeah, for those of you, let me give me 1 second, Richard. Bill Lumpkin Jr. called about 2 hours ago and told us that his dad, Bill Lumpkin, had passed away, and the previous caller had just mentioned him, a legendary sports writer, my boss, and Richard Scott and I worked together for a long time, and we're talking about a great sports writer here who decided to start making an honest living. I know you went into teaching. Are you still doing that?
Yes, I'm in education.
Okay.
So.
Well, I admire somebody getting out of this crazy rat race that we used to be in. I'm really glad to hear that, Richard.
Well, if I was doing something as fun as you were doing, maybe I would have stayed in it. But it wasn't much fun anymore.
No. Well, but tell the audience about Bill.
Okay. When I first came there, Bill said this, and you were in the room when he said it in the old sports department. And Bill said, "I don't know why we got to hire somebody from out of state from Missouri to cover Auburn with all these people here. We got plenty of people in this state to cover Auburn better." And I just thought, "Holy smokes, I'm staying out of his way." He gave me his blessing.
Wow, what amazing.
I had to earn his blessing, but once I got his blessing, you know, it was 100% forever. And one of my favorite times ever is, you know, you wrote the tribute to him, you know, when he was retiring, and I got to write more of the feature story for him.
Right.
He and I were going to a game at Auburn, and I just turned on the tape recorder, and he told stories. I'd ask him questions every once in a while, but he must have answered 50 of my questions before I could even get them out, because he knew what I'd need for a story like that. And it was just a great honor.
And you know, Richard,
somebody special to him.
In fact, I dug that article out during a break a few minutes ago, and he retired in 1994. And what was remarkable, and I know you put it in your piece as well, that on his final day at the Birmingham Post-Herald, he was as relevant as he was when he showed up there. I mean, Bill went out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah.
I mean, he was president of the Football Writers Association. He was on television. I always felt like he retired too early.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He still had a lot of juice left in him. I would think of him as being somebody like Springsteen or Bob Dylan, who's still relevant.
Yeah.
You know, even in their later years.
No, that's not easy to do. But no, he was his influence, and I told Bill the story about Coach Bryant. I mean, Bill could walk into any athletic department in the country during back in the day and get in to see the head coach. And you know that what I'm about to say. We talked to a reporter earlier that's still trying to get an injury report from Kirby Smart from an injury of 2 weeks ago. It's a different world today than it was back then. And he knew everyone, and everyone knew him, and he knew their wives and children. And it was such a different world, Richard. And you caught a little bit of it, not much, because but you got in a little bit late. But unfortunately, you saw the end of it.
Yeah, but his stories always brought things to life, and always he was such a good storyteller.
Oh.
They always made me feel like I was in there with him.
No, I'm so glad you called.
Funny guy.
How is your family, if I may ask you on an open line here?
Well, the boys are up and grown. They live in Vermont and Brooklyn.
Do they really?
My wife is doing just great. She's doing a lot of national work, not just local work, and I'm really proud of her. How's Miss Linda doing?
She is doing great. You know her. Nothing slows her down. She's still practicing medicine.
I got a good doctor. Yeah. I got a good doctor, but I haven't replaced her.
Yeah, no, I said this when I first got here, that I commuted for about 9 months, and I finally had to stop coming back to Birmingham, because every time I would run into a friend, especially the wife of a friend, they wouldn't speak to me because I had taken their doctor away. Hey, you never know what the future brings, Richard. I mean, there could be a return one of these days.
We'd love to have you back. Whatever works for your career and hers.
Well, we hope to get back soon. Hey, thank you, Richard. Really great. Nice of you to call. It means a lot.
Thank you. Let me talk to you today.
It's my pleasure. Richard Scott, who worked with a bunch of great sports writers under Bill Lumpkin, who passed away earlier today at the age of 92. We'll take a short break. and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back, and Fred is up next. Fred, thanks. Good afternoon.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, Paul, I had you on Friday, and I could almost jump through the TV trying to give you support on what turned out to be almost April Fool's Day rather than Good Friday with all you were having to encounter.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you had the young man from California that was really quite sad and subdued with life and things of that nature, but I just thought that, you know, it sounded like more April Fool's Day than did Good Friday, but just to refresh your memory, I kind of triggered some people's thoughts when I brought up the names Gordon Pettis.
Oh, yeah.
And Tommy Lewis, some old football memories from the Alabama days, and then you mentioned something about you had lost your father, and I hope I'm not speaking out of line.
No, go right ahead.
At a rather early age, and I'm assuming that was when you were still living in Memphis?
Yeah, he died when I was 15.
I was born in a farmhouse, and I don't want to give you my history here, but I was born in a farmhouse on the Kentucky-Tennessee state line, 1936, which is now Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Right.
And my dad died when I was 5 years old, and he died in the house I was born in, and we also had the funeral in the house that I was born in, and at the age of almost 85, I can still remember that funeral at the age of 5. So after World War II broke out, then, of course, we had to get out of there because the government bought our land. And I moved into a town you might have heard before, Hopkinsville, Kentucky.
Oh, sure.
Better known as Hoptown.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you might be able to put a new handle on me, Hollywood from Hoptown. Because that's my old stomping grounds. I came to Memphis in 1960, so I do understand a little bit about losing a father at an early age, and my youngest sister was born 3 weeks after my dad died.
Oh, my goodness.
And my mother never remarried, and when we had to move, most of our family went into Hopkinsville or Hoptown, and then on our first Christmas there, I received third-degree burns on both legs from my knees down to my ankles, and I was not ever supposed to walk again. But I did recuperate and end up playing all the sports, and that's became a sports nuts and was blessed with some children that became good sports, too. But I've gotten the habit of calling you because as we get older, there's some things we have to learn to do to learn to grow old. But I don't know when you were born. I'm guessing somewhere around 1955, probably somewhere
yes.
in that era. And it was in 55 that my old high school basketball team, we were trying to make it to the Sweet 16, which back then was a Kentucky State Championship. And we were fighting to get to the basketball heavens in Kentucky. And I talked to you a little bit earlier about Bear Bryant coaching against Coach Rupp up there in Lexington. And I was just wondering if you happen to know or remember any of the assistant coaches as Coach Bryant had on his staff. But Don Shula.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure about this one, Paul. I think Howard Smullingberger.
Yeah, no, I do. That is correct. But yeah, I never. Blanton. I knew about. I've talked to so many of those guys in the past, but I never realized Don Shula was on that staff.
Don Shula is one of the most memorable, probably from that staff. Charlie Bradshaw.
Oh yeah, I knew Charlie.
To coach. Yeah, and then also switching over a little bit, I can tell you later on about having played nine holes of golf with Jackie Sherrill. That's quite a story. And he played with my wife and I, and he remembered her later at a banquet and at an old Waver Golf Club in West Point, Mississippi.
Oh, sure. Great place.
And, she said, yeah, she said, well, I never heard of the guy because they went around the table introducing. And he said, oh, yeah, I've already met Miss Betts. So there's a number of old school stories, you know.
Hey, Fred, tell me this, because you're obviously 20 years older than I am, but why do people like us remember more things that happened when we were 15 or 16 or 20 than we do yesterday?
Well, it's an exercise, I think, probably a subconscious exercise, because I still play a little golf.
That's great.
At my age, and I dearly love it, but when I start talking about, you know, my life and coming up, people say, you ought to write a book. I said, well, who's going to buy it? Only my friends. But I just wanted to touch base with you and let you know I was listening Friday, but I was on a battery-powered phone and I couldn't
No,
that's
okay. No, Fred, no, it was, I appreciate, one of the calls you mentioned we had on, I think it was Thursday, a young man named Michael called from California, and I wish he would call back. He was just talking about the struggles that he had during the COVID year, and I think he speaks for many, many people. You've lived a great life, and it's a tough year.
Yeah, I'm now not only a grandfather, but I'm a great-grandfather four times with a fifth one on the way.
So, oh, man.
You know, I do have
what a life.
A little bit. Well, yeah, it has been a wonderful life. You know, the old saying was that in the end times, knowledge, technology, communication will be at an all-time high, which I think you would have to agree it probably is right now. But do you happen to know what will be at an all-time low?
No.
Wisdom.
Wisdom. That is so correct. No, I agree with you on that, and I can't tell you how many times that I would go with my parents or later by myself to the library, and there's just something about reading and comprehending versus just zipping through a computer screen or a phone.
When you were here, was George Lapides still operating?
I knew George was someone who I looked up to, admired, wanted to be just like. George was one of the first sports writers to start doing radio, and he was fabulous at it. And I got to know George fairly well later in his career.
And Mike Fleming? Does that
Mike Fleming was not only someone I look up to, but he was a legitimate mentor. I met Mike when I was in college, and we remained friends. And I learned, he passed away a couple of years ago, and it was he was just one of the great people I've ever met in the industry. He just a wonderful man.
Well, my memories are that they were very, very, very nice in their articles. They wrote about my oldest son who played quarterback out at Memphis State back in the 70s.
Really?
And, oh, yes, they wrote some very, very, I still have them, as a matter of fact.
So was he there with Pancoast or Williamson?
Pancoast recruited my son. Okay. And as you know, we have an early signing date, which is December, and then we have the national signing date, which is February. And so Pancoast went after my son. And then Pancoast got an offer at Vanderbilt,
right,
and he always wanted to get back into the SEC. And then, of course, when he left, Spook Murphy was the athletic director at the time. And he walked into the athletic committee that was supposedly going to search for a football coach, and he said, no need to search. I've got the next Bear Bryant. Unfortunately, it was not the next Bear Bryant.
I remember that one very well.
It happened to be a coach from that you probably know because he caught Joe Namath's first down.
I sure do.
And for Alabama. So.
And by the way, Richard nearly became the Alabama coach about two different times. I went to high school with with Spook's daughter. Knew her fairly well. Hey, thanks for the call. I hate to run. We're up against a break, but thank you, Fred. Really appreciate that.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.